Hi, my name is Lena Fersch and I have been in love with improvised theater for half my life. Lately, however, things haven't exactly been great. Improv and I were going through a rough patch and I need some outside help. I really want to get the spark back in the relationship. So I decided to talk to improvisers from around the globe to seek advice. How can I make up with improv? Let's find out. My guest today is Jim Libby from Austria, Vienna. Originally, he's from Maine, USA, but you cannot tell because his German is just perfect. It's so sad you can't hear it in this English-speaking podcast. Jim is an improviser, he's an actor, he's a director, he does lots of music, he's really an all-rounder. Co-founder of the English Lovers, a company in Vienna, Austria, that he is still a member of today. Jim is also a member of a duo called The Messengers and another duo called Rocket Sugar Factory. So Jim and I, we've been friends for a very long time, so I was excited for him to give me some advice on my situation and also just to catch up, talk about all different kinds of things. I'm not gonna keep on babbling, just listen for it yourselves. Have fun. James Franklin Libby II. Thank you so much. It's like I'm having royalty on this podcast. That's what right? It feels like. So, I have a problem that I would be really, I'd be glad for some advice. I took a break from improvisation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I almost didn't perform. Actually, one of the very few occasions that I did perform since Corona started was with you in this Kultur picnic.
That was
great.
That was amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was one of the very rare occasions that I performed in the last year, and it just felt so good to not be on stage, and I was so surprised by that. And it made me go, maybe I just need to take a step back. And now I'm finding it hard to sort of get back into it. Slowly I am getting back into it, but I'm struggling.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I also hear that apparently I'm the one that killed improv for you. So
no.
Great.
No.
Got that
no,
going
no.
for me.
No, you resurrected it a little bit, like temporarily, because it was dead okay. before. So oh. you... So you did great.
Thanks.
Probably if it
Thanks.
Wasn't for you, I'd buried it already.
Oh. Oy, I hear you though, man. I have had such a long love life with improv and improvising and with impro and with improvisations theater. But man, sometimes, you do need a break in a long relationship. Sometimes you need to take a step back. I think every relationship thrives from that dance of nearness and distance. It's that push and pull and the tug and rub. No, that's a terrible joke. But you know what I mean? It's the... You have to have that dynamic. And so I think that's totally cool that you decided to take a break.
Yeah, I think it's... I'm really happy with the break. I'm just thinking about it a lot, how to get back into it. I decided for myself to not do online shows, for instance. I did do one. I talked about that actually in the last episode, which was really fun. And I'm going to do another one quite soon. So I'm really excited about that because it's two very particular projects that I'm excited about because of the people, because of, I just feel like the concepts are fun and you know, a good amount of silly. And maybe that's what's been missing, you know, some silliness, some lightness. So I would like to get that back, I guess.
Is that perhaps one of the reasons you wanted to break up? Had you been missing or had that been missing from the relationship with impro? Or was it really the pandemic?
I think the pandemic really was
a catalyst.
A catalyst, exactly.
Yeah.
I think it brought something to light that already was there before. Yeah, I think it definitely had a lot to do with it becoming more of a chore than it being a source of inspiration, I guess.
You know, I hear that story from a lot of improvising producers like yourself, because it's double duty. And you're not only just showing up to a show to make art with your friends and colleagues. You've set up the theater and done the stuff to make sure that everybody can just show up, as well as showing up. So I hear that a lot, and it's tough. It's tough to always be setting the table for somebody else.
Yeah, it really is. It's so funny because actually this morning I took an online workshop at the Cockpit Theater in London, and it was about producing your own work. And while I was listening to the instructor, I thought, why exactly am I doing this again? This sounds horrible. I got on this talk about marketing and finding venues. I was interested in it because I'm sort of toying with the idea of writing a show instead of additionally to improvising, who knows. So I was just interested in how that would work, because I don't really know anything about that. I say like the theater. I don't even know how to say that without insulting improvisation, but you know what I mean.
Scripted theater.
Yeah, thank you very much, James.
Sure.
Franklin the second.
James Franklin Libby the second.
I'm so sorry.
So verzeiht Musein.
I'm so sorry, Your Highness. I'm never going to make that mistake again, I promise.
So one part of it is your overworkedness because of your producing stuff. But was there something else?
Yeah, so I've talked about this before. I'd be interested in the way that you see it. In a way, I think I'm lacking commitment. I find myself not 100% in it. And I actually think I might have mentioned this to you, that I sometimes feel like I always have a foot in the door so that I can get outside real quickly. Like I don't let the door shut to fully be committed to what I'm doing, because I'm scared that the door won't open again. So I'm just, you know, keeping my foot in the door so I can get out. And so there is like this longing inside me to do something that's really risky and really vulnerable. And maybe it's stupid to think that I have to go and look outside of improvisation to find that. Maybe I could find it within improvisation as well. But right now it just feels like I need to do some stand-up. I need to, you know, not to be a stand-up comedian, because I don't think I want to be that, but just to, in a way, get my, you know, have my, how do you say it in English? Have my ass handed to me? Is that a thing?
Sure.
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 I don't know. I want something to be handed to me.
If you're going to get something handed to you, an ass could be one of those things.
Great. Then that's what I want.
Yeah. Here's my question. So at first I wasn't sure. And now I think what I'm hearing is you're talking about that fully committing to the art form in the moment of your performance, right?
Yeah.
That you leave that door open, that door that says, I'm not all the way in this. I wonder does this question resonate with you? Do you think it might be partly risk and reward? What I mean is there's a risk to being so vulnerable. There's a risk to going into that room and closing the door. And is the reward for that risk big enough on that stage in that room? Is it enough to reward the risk?
That's a very good question. So let me answer with an example. So at the last festival, the Improv Festival in Würzburg, 5 days before the festival started, as you know, we had to change the entire festival because we canceled the workshops. Okay. So that happened.
Brief note to all listeners. I am so glad to have been a part of that. And I want everyone to know how unbelievably tireless Lena Fersch is and what a wonderful experience, despite and maybe simply because of all of the weirdness. It was amazing.
Oh, thank you so much. I really, really, really appreciate that. It really was a very let's just say, interesting time. And a lot of interesting things came out of it as well. I was super happy that you and Anne were, Anne Raab, that you were coming to Würzburg and you could do your show. And that was something really great that came out of it. Gunther and Nicole, the stupid lovers, they were there. So I really appreciated people showing up and doing that with us. And I got the opportunity to do a solo show that I've tried like in a 15-minute version before. I did it, it was like a solo music show with the wonderful Michael Bibo and Felix Mannherz on drums. And I did that show and it was a big risk for me because I was there all by myself singing and playing scenes. And so I guess the risk was there. I went off stage and I thought, I have no idea how that went, because also it's just a strange feeling with every other seat being empty in Corona times. And people came up to me and they said, you know what, that was great. I mean, I think people liked the show, and still I didn't feel like, oh my God, great. Yeah, I pulled that off. I was happy, but I wasn't euphoric. And I miss euphoria. I miss going, oh, that was, you know, I don't know what that was and I don't understand it, but that was amazing. And I didn't have that feeling.
Well, what I'm hearing right now is that euphoria, that unbelievable deluge of emotion that you get. I always call it that high school energy that, and you, yeah, you go through that in improv, right? And and it's that first flush of crush that you have on the art form. And every time you come off stage, it was the most amazing time ever.
Definitely.
Because
yeah,
there just haven't been that many times. And I think that's addicting. But then after a while, I think our definition of reward has to change. So that rush of emotion, because all crushes start to slide.
Some don't say that.
Some stay in the newlywed stage a lot longer than others. But then a deeper love can also start to develop.
And deeper. I still miss the crush.
Oh yeah. Don't get me wrong. We still are always chasing that crush. And that's why we end up flirting with lots of different art forms. I'm not sure where this metaphor is going, but or what we need to do to stick with it is that I don't know as you'll ever get that back in improv, that feeling, that rush. But, you know, we all know improvisers that come into that big country castle of impro, and they're like, oh my God, this is amazing, this is so beautiful, this is so cool, this is great. And then that teacher comes along and says, yeah, but this is just the foyer, come on inside to the great room, or, you know, up in the turrets there's a really cool place, and there's a pole that goes behind the chimney and down into the dungeon. There's a dungeon and there's a secret door in the library. And we all know that there are also performers that are like, oh, that all sounds cool, but I like it right here. I'm happy with staying in the foyer. This is great.
I see what you mean.
You keep exploring the castle, which is also cool. But there are different rewards in all those different places.
The only thing that I am certain about with Jim Libby is that the drink that he'll order at a bar is vodka. But that I am really certain of.
Yeah.
Actually, Jim, now that we're talking about what do we know about each other,
okay,
I've made a little list of things that I'm interested in learning about you. We'll start with something easy. Jim, what's a silly fear that you have?
All my fears are incredibly serious. No, what's a silly fear that I have? When I was a kid, I would, like, if it was getting dark, I always had this thing where I wanted to get out of the shadows. And so, like, you'd really, like, run fast from pool of light to pool of light.
That's really sweet.
And sometimes I still do that. like, if you're in the pool of light, they can't get you. And yeah, that's a silly fear.
Yeah, that is a very silly fear. I find it cute.
Okay.
So what is a dish that you know how to cook well?
There's a few dishes that I know how to cook well. There's one dish that I have cooked now a number of times. I always did it in a team because it was just super fun to do it that way.
Yeah.
But it's quite involved, and it is called a turducken, which is a chicken that is stuffed, and stuffed chicken is inside of a duck, and that duck and chicken are inside of a turkey. And in between each of these fowls are different kinds of stuffing.
That's the vegetarian's nightmare.
It really is. It's a vegetarian's nightmare.
Wow. Turducken. Ken. Chicken. Turducken.
Yeah.
Wow, Jim. If I weren't a vegetarian, I'd ask you to make that for me. But it's not really like, you wouldn't make that on a date, for instance, like if you had a romantic date with someone, you wouldn't go like, I made this turducken for you. It's my specialty.
Just whipped up a turducken for you. No, that we would always make that for Friendsgiving, like our post-punk neoclassical Friendsgiving. Instead of the American Thanksgiving or the Canadian Thanksgiving, we would do the Friendsgiving.
What's a luxury thing that you have that you couldn't live without?
I think throughout life, there have been several things that I have gotten and then never wanted to live without again. One of them being the unsung hero of every relationship, the dishwasher. I got a dishwasher at some point in my life, and I cannot imagine ever living without a dishwasher again.
I don't have one, but I used to have one. And I was really stupid when I moved into my new apartment. I thought, I have a really tiny kitchen. Probably it's a good idea to have just, you know, some storage. And I regret it now very much. So I'm also team dishwasher for sure. So here is my next question. What's like an expertise that you have that nobody would assume that you have?
I know a little bit about a lot of things.
I see.
There's one thing that most people are surprised about me, is that I keep my house very neat. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who's like, you can always eat off Libby's floors. Like, my house is always clean. It's always put away. It's always, because I find clutter always makes my brain crazy.
I can totally relate to that. I'm the same way. That's why I'm also very much missing the dishwasher, because my office is my kitchen at the moment. And so everything is like, there's like plates and stuff, and then it doesn't fit into the sink. So like the noodle zeep is like somewhere.
One time I came across for me, I think we've had this conversation before, you know, about my fascination with Nordic walking and how I think it's one of the...
I actually don't know that.
So I'm fascinated by Nordic walking because I truly believe Nordic walking is one of the most amazing inventions of the last century. Because if you can tell me another sport that doesn't have accessories yet, then we have made our first million. Because Nordic walking was like, let's take something, walking. Doesn't have accessories. Let's give it accessories. Let's give it to a couple of sticks, but they're not just sticks. They're like specially made sticks with springs that you have to buy DVDs to learn how to use the sticks. And then we can have groups, and Nordic walking is amazing.
Sounds like someone just had a really, really good marketing idea.
Yeah. I'm thrilled and fascinated by Nordic walking. what the hell were we talking about before Nordic walking?
I don't even remember.
Wait, it was an example of something that I wanted to tell you. What was it we were talking about? Oh, another invention that has blown my mind, like Nordic walking. And it is this. Someday I'm going to be an adult, and I am going to have two dishwashers. One dishwasher will be filled with clean dishes. And as I use them, I will put them into the other dishwasher. And when that other dishwasher is halfway full, I will clean that shit. So, or you know what I mean? I'm just going to, and then I don't have to have any dishes on shelves or anything. I can just put like the special shit, but like all the normal stuff, it's already clean and it's already put away. You know what I mean?
That's so nerdy.
I heard this idea and I thought, that is blowing my mind. That would be a luxury item.
That you would never, ever give up ever again.
I can't give up one dishwasher. If I had two, I would be unstoppable.
So I have another question for you. You work in the arts, James Franklin Libby II. If you didn't work in the arts, what would be your profession of choice?
I ask myself this question every day since last March 13th. I don't know. When I was younger, I used to say I would be a physicist because that's what I knew I was going to be until...
Really?
I was convinced I was going to be a physicist until I was a freshman in high school. And then I started acting and never looked back. And then years later, I realized all the things that fascinated me about physics were the same things that fascinated me about my artistic work. You know, taking things apart and figuring out how they work and putting them together in other contexts. And instead of the physical world, it just became the human condition. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't a Wissenschaftler, I was a Gewissenschaftler. But then I've been doing this for so long, then the answer was always nothing. I couldn't be anything else. I would like to think, if I wasn't a performer, that I would be doing something that helped. My mom was always a nurse, and my sister is a teacher, and her wife is a nurse. My aunt was a nurse. My dad was a teacher. I mean, these were people who did things and do things that really help on an individual and on a community basis. I would like to think I would do something like that. I don't know. Maybe it's too late. Maybe it's too late for me to do anything else.
I don't think so. I think it just comes down to if you want to or not, in a way. Because, I mean, you're a person who, or you strike me as someone who tries out many different things. It's just, you know, it's like in a general similar area where you try out things, but still you try out things all the time. So I think if you want it to do something different, I guess you just do it. Maybe it's just that you don't want to do anything else, which is great.
I think that's probably closer to the truth than anything else I could say. I found that I've been doing this show since last year. Every Thursday with Michael Smulik, we've been doing a show called It Should Be About Something.
Yeah, and I was going to ask about that.
We only do it live, but those videos live on, right? More than anything else I've ever done, that lives on. And I think there's something weird about that. What's the best improv show you never saw? Right? There's all the time we would talk about our shows like, oh my God, did you see this? You weren't there. Oh my God, it was amazing. The best show was the one that you missed, right? Now all the shows are there to be watched over and over and over again. Maybe I'm alone on this. Tell me. Mm-hmm. I think something fundamentally shifts when it goes from being in the moment to having been recorded. And even if there is nothing done to the recording, even if it is just a one-to-one pure reflection of what happened live, it's still different.
Yeah. I don't think you're alone in this.
Okay.
I think if it doesn't have a purpose to store something, then why do it? If it does have a purpose to store it, then why not store it? So that really is the question that it comes down to. Like, for instance, like podcasting for me is something very different than an improvised show.
Absolutely.
So when I listen to a podcast, I might listen to the same episode again because I liked it very much. I have one podcast that I really like, and I'm happy to advertise it around the world. It's called My Dad Wrote a Porno. I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's really, really, it's so funny. I listen to it while, you know, washing the dishes or whatever, and I just laugh to myself. It's really, really funny. And I'm just so glad that I can re-listen to the episodes because I listen to all the seasons once a year, like ever since it came out, basically. And I'm so happy I get to do that because it was made for that exact purpose.
Yeah.
It's a series.
Yeah.
And like Mad Men is also something that you can rewatch all the time. And as you know, I do that because I love Mad Men.
And as you know, I do that because I love yes, Mad Men.
It's wonderful. It's a great show. So I'm so happy I get to rewatch it whenever I want. But with an improvised show, part of the magic is that it's gone afterwards and you can never produce the moment or reproduce. I mean, it's different if you create something from improvisation that is then turned into something else. A little bit like the movie that you made, Another One Opens, a
right,
fully improvised film that you can watch and watch and watch again. It's made for that purpose.
That's right. That's right.
Do you know what I mean?
I do. I do wholeheartedly. I mean, I've been struggling with this question for a long time. Years ago, we did a show called Exposure. With the English Lovers, which mm-hmm, was very far on the performance end of the spectrum, where the audience came into the theater and went through the backstage where we were exposing everything. They would walk past our dressing rooms and we would just be getting ready. And then they would walk onto the stage. And through this whole thing, they were asked to expose something about themselves. They were to write down in a voting booth kind of construction, they were to write down something that they truly believed, but they wouldn't want their friends to know that they believed it. And people would go into this sort of voting booth kind of thing and write down their thing and stick it into a little hole, and they got collected. And then they would walk down from the stage into the audience area and find their seat and sit down in it. And then at the beginning of the show, we, as performers, came out, and once the audience got down and turned around, they saw that this construction, this voting booth construction that they had been in, it was actually built out of 40 small blocks that on one side were all mirrored. So they're all looking at a mirror, a large mirror that's built out of 40 blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, as performers, at the beginning of the show, would come out, music would start, we would take this huge box filled with secrets from the audience, and each performer would choose one, and that became the inspiration mm-hmm, for that character. And while we were doing this show, another level of the exposure was I gave several people in the audience iPhones. These iPhones were connected wirelessly mm-hmm, to an iPad and acted as remote cameras. Because the whole idea of this thing was that I wanted to find a way to record the show,
mm-hmm,
but recording theater sucks, as we all know, and mm-hmm, we now very much know. And so rather than trying to do an ORF, you know, super produced thing, I wanted to recreate like a bootleg from a concert. So I gave the audience these cameras, told them just to film whatever they wanted to film, and I had somebody editing these cameras live while the show went on,
mm-hmm,
which gave a whole another layer of exposure, because we got to see not only what the audience was interested in, because sometimes mm-hmm, it would just be the piano player's fingers, and sometimes it would just be somebody's face watching, sometimes it would be the action on the stage.
Cool, I like it, yeah.
And it was just trying to capture that atmosphere rather than to one-to-one record mm-hmm, the experience. So I've been struggling with this idea for a long time, because once you have that, you can replay it. But it is, of course, like Magritte said, it's not a pipe, right? It's not mm-hmm, that show. And so for me, dealing with this question, like, how do you improvise a movie? How do you record and archive an art form that is I actually created to go into the ether? I still don't have the answers. I've been trying a lot of different things. I'm still not sure what the answer is. I kind of like what's happening in the internet, because the internet is a copying machine. That's mm-hmm, how it works. And so everything that's been being improvised into this system, which is for copying and for communicating, I think there's some interesting things happening there, but we're still comparing them to IRL theater, in real life theater, and it's not. It's a different medium. It's a different thing. And so to come full circle, the copies of the archived material later of those things, I think we'll find out whether we want to keep them on databases or not, or whether we can send them to some ether, or if we can copy it all, as you said, and find some way to be able to get to those things, to go back to them, because maybe there is one improvised show that somebody would love to revisit every day.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we want to be able to revisit every day simply because we can't. In Ford's book about it's all subcultures,
maybe
like I was at a party, must have been years ago now. I can't remember last time I went to a party. and somebody was telling me that they are really into what they did. It was all in German, so I'm going to try to translate this. But the idea was they go out into the woods, they get a map, and they have to. It's like geocaching, mm-hmm. or it's like trekking.
I do remember us talking about this.
And they go, but they do it in trucks. And so, you know, like, and that there are, you know, hundreds of people that go to a festival where they drive out into the woods with trucks trying to get around stones and trees.
That's awesome.
And it's a huge subculture, right? You think improv is big. Those guys, they're huge. Have you ever heard of them? Nope.
That's really incredible to me. Yeah,
you know, like the world of ultimate frisbee.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge, mm-hmm. huge. They've got festivals. Thousands of people show up. Beach volleyball. Now, sports, I know, is a different thing, right? But improv is right on the edge of sport, I suppose. You know, improv is the new yoga, right? Yoga's big. That's a subculture.
Definitely.
Everybody's...
Yoga, I don't know if yoga is a subculture. I mean, yoga is like a culture.
Yoga is part of the culture now?
I think so. I mean...
Has it been absorbed?
I think so. Like, if someone says to me, yeah, I just had a little yoga sesh, I'm not really surprised. I'm like, yeah, because we all do the yoga sesh.
Right. But is that because of your intersection of subcultures? I bet there's a place in... Utah? I don't know. I've never been to Utah. I'm sure there's a place where if you and I had a yoga session, someone would go, oh, what? What you talking about there?
You're probably right.
Yeah, it's weird subcultures.
It's kind of cool. I like that it's like you don't need alternate universes because they already exist in a way, right?
We all live on the same planet, but we all live in different worlds.
If the listeners could see you right now with the last sentence that you said, because what I see is Jim's virtual background, which is the northern lights above a forest. And you just seem a little bit like a guru, and I would follow you wherever you go, Jim.
I hear you. You know, that's actually something I have actively in my life gone away from.
From
being a guru. People trying to make me a guru. Yeah, it happened a couple of times. I know plenty of people that have become gurus. And it was just something that I always thought the best way to become better at something is to get a lot of different teachers. Just mm-hmm. get as many tools in that toolbox as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I have a way of thinking about things and a way of trying out things, but that person does too. Go find what resonates with you. Don't keep taking my class.
Mm-hmm.
I am not the truth.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating? Like I mean, I guess it's a very human wish. You wish for someone who guides you, and if that, you know, something that you can sort of give up control to, you can let go and believe in something. I mean, we all want to do that. We all want to believe in something, and we all have to navigate in a very complex world. I just recently watched on Netflix, because pandemic, I watched this documentary series about a religious leader, I guess. Mm-hmm. His name's Bhagwan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I saw that. Yeah.
I forget.
I finished Netflix, by the way. I finished it.
No, you did not.
I did.
Don't spoil the ending of Modern Family for me because I'm still on that. Thank you. So I watched this documentary about this cult that follows this Indian leader. His name's Bhagwan, and he founds a city somewhere in, I want to say, Oklahoma? No. Mm-hmm. Is it Oklahoma?
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
Oregon.
You're absolutely right. It was Oregon.
You know, you have these. You have this one lady that is being interviewed that actually had to go to prison because she committed a crime. I don't want to spoil it, but she committed a crime and she had to go to prison. And afterwards, she sort of woke up out of that dream of following Bhagwan. And she was just, you know, a nice lady looking for some guidance. And suddenly she finds herself in a cult like that. And it makes me a little bit scared, if I'm honest, because I go, who would have to talk to me for me to go, I think that's the truth. I'm going to follow you. You know what I mean?
I think it happens more often than we'd like to think.
Maybe in little ways also.
Sure. I've spoken to, I had a buddy of mine who, that's what he did. He helped to deprogram people that had been in cults.
That's super interesting.
And he said very often it was very smart people from very good, you know, it's not like a thing. It's like low economics, social standing. Mm-hmm. He said it happens to all people and to all manners of intelligence, to all manner of, you know, walk of life. Yeah. It's a super weird thing, but it brings me to this idea that I think about often. I think it happens to artists when, because you said we like to believe in something.
Mm-hmm. Right?
It just brings me to my question: can you separate art from the artist? So, mm-hmm. I think like we get really upset as people when we find out an artist was an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
An author is an asshole, mm-hmm. for some reason. Mm-hmm. An actor is an asshole for some reason. Whatever. We hate it. Ah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because we love art. Art is, as human beings, is a transcendental experience. And oftentimes when art hits us, we have this unknowable, unconscious feeling that we have been connected to the source in some way. And so the artist, the person that created this thing, must also be touched by the source, must be in some way closer to the source than we are, purer somehow.
It's like a Jesus Christ situation.
And when we find out that they aren't,
mm-hmm.
we get so disappointed. We get so frustrated and so saddened. And because we've forgotten on some level that this person is a person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one of the reasons that people have a hard time of separating art from the artist.
There's a TED Talk by Elizabeth Gilbert, the mm-hmm. author of Eat, Pray, Love.
Yes.
That I thought was super interesting. She talks about the actual meaning of genius, because what we do now is we think that the genius is the person, but mm-hmm. actually the mm-hmm. genius is like sort of a spirit or something that moves through you and helps you create work. And it helps you to stay humble, because you can always go, yeah, I wrote a great book, but also genius wrote it through me, so I can only take half of the credit, right? But also it keeps you sane, because you're not going, oh no, I'm an absolute loser and I'm a failure as a human being because my book wasn't liked by that many people. And I think that's just for mental health, because there is a lot of mental illness in the arts.
Oh, yeah.
And I think for, you know, just to stay sane and healthy, I think trying to do that separation will first off make you more happy. And secondly, I think it also helps you to put out better work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what you are describing is the thing that I wish for every student.
Aww.
It's the thing that I wish for every student.
I get an A+.
You totally get an A+. I wish that for every student, because especially for the students of improv, because mm-hmm. it's so close to us. Because it is us. We're making these decisions, and at the beginning, we fail all the time. The decisions aren't good, and this doesn't work, and I don't have any taste here, and I don't have any timing there. And then I think, I am a failure because I did something that didn't quite work in an improv scene. Oh, my goodness. We have to separate ourselves from it. We have to.
Mm-hmm.
It flows through us. I need to watch that TED Talk. I'm totally down with that idea of the vessel. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've heard that a lot from artists, authors especially, because the authors are often the ones that will either get it in one, or they set up shop and go in and start writing from 10 to 1 o'clock mm-hmm. and hoping that genius will show up and be like, okay, here's a little bit for you. Are you open to it? Are you ready for it? Do you got it? Okay, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you have to prepare the ground. And I think, yeah, we do that with improv too. You, mm-hmm. at some point you understand the concepts. Now we just have to practice them and do it better and better and better. And then I can start being open to the coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah, what Elizabeth Gilbert said in that talk that really resonated with me was, you just need to show up and do the work, and everything else really is up to chance, up to genius, up to God, whatever you believe in, you know.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. And it's in a way, I think this is a really nice, that we're finding our way back to the beginning of this conversation, because yeah, sometimes it's really hard to just show up and do the work without judgment, without judgment. I don't have anything more.
I would only add, I think you're right. I think it is about showing up. And I wouldn't talk about the judgment. What I would say is, for me, it all comes down to expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And wanting to have that euphoria back is great, but expecting that euphoria to be there is not. I think if we can replace our expectations with curiosity,
mm-hmm.
if we can go into it, if we can show up and be there, not with the attitude of, this is how it should be, could be, would be, but what is it? You know, the difference between what's he on about and, hey, what's he on about? Replacing expectation with curiosity.
Yeah.
Will at least make you active in knowing whether or not the euphoria is coming.
Yeah, that's a really nice thought. Maybe curiosity plays a huge role in, for me, in rekindling the old flame in my relationship with improvisation is what I'm thinking.
I like the way you said that, though, because now it puts me in the frame of mind of, oh, you want to win impro back. So what we're talking about is a seduction. Now we can get into it. How do I seduce improv?
No, you know what, Jim? I really think I want to be seduced.
You want to be seduced.
I do. I do want to be seduced.
You want improv to seduce you?
Yeah. I feel like I've done a lot of seducing.
Yeah.
I think I want to be seduced.
Oh, I hear you. That'll be our new club. We'll have a seduction club.
I'm in. Great. Count me in. Jim, it's been really nice talking with you, catching up. It's been really, we worked ourselves through some interesting topics, I'd say.
Absolutely. I yep. love talking to you every single time I get a chance. I mean, you know this, but I will tell this now to the world of the podcasts. If Lena Fersh says jump, James Franklin Libby II will ask how high. Nope, Lena, thank you so much. It's been great, and I love it, and I can't wait to find out how your relationship develops with improv.
I'll keep you posted for sure.
Cool.
Thank you. What a fun chat with my friend Jim Libby. And as attentive listeners that I'm sure you all are, you will have noticed, wait, Lena said she was going to be talking to Simon Schwegler from Zurich in this episode. What happened? Well, technical difficulties happened. I'm new to this, so please be patient with me. I hope that it'll work out in the future. You might want to visit our website, the website of the Würzburger Impro Theater Festival, because the workshop program for this year is online. It's going to be a summer edition happening in July. Just go to the link in the bio. Also, there's one more thing. Our organization puts on various different projects throughout the entire year. This podcast is just one of them. If you'd like to support our work, you can help us with a donation. You can donate via PayPal. That's paypal.me/improvfestival or directly to our bank account. For more info, visit the link in the description. Thank you so much and have a great day wherever you are on this planet.